This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey there, and welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. A recent assessment of mathematics performance around the world ranked the United States 36th out of 64 countries in the study. When the level of spending was taken into account, we sank to the very bottom. In America today, math is widely hated, and it's taught poorly, and it serves as a source of anxiety for millions of school children. Our nation is rapidly falling behind the rest of the developed world, and the future of our economy depends on the quality of teaching that our children receive today. According to Jo Bowler, who's our guest for this part of today's show, and she's also a professor of mathematics education at Stanford University, we have reached the point of crisis, and a new course of action is crucial. We're going to talk with Jo about the nature of the problem, and she's got a lot to say about which teaching methods are exciting students and getting results. Based on her years of research conducting studies of middle school and high school students, she's got a lot of concrete, practical solutions that can help all of us reverse the trend, including approaches that we need to be doing in the classroom, strategies that students can be putting into place right now, advice for parents on how to help kids enjoy math and perhaps how to help ourselves enjoy math a little bit more, and ways to work with teachers in school. It all starts when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
I'm 4 years old, and I'm the only one in my whole class that can tie his own shoes.
My mom took me to the circus for my birthday. Half my friends already went, but now I've gone too.
Most kids make fun of me because I still believe in the tooth fairy. But I got $5 yesterday, I believe.
A third of the kids in my 8th grade class drink alcohol regularly.
Over 99% of my class has been offered illegal drugs.
Half of my college classmates binge drink, abuse drugs, or do both. But the frequent dinners I had with my family have helped make sure I'm not one of them.
Go to CasaFamilyDay.org. Take the Family Day Pledge and get tips on how to talk to your kids about drugs and alcohol. Have dinner with them often, and you can significantly lower their risk of substance abuse. Dinner makes a difference. A message from the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Jo Bowler, who's the author of What's Math Got to Do with It? How Teachers and Parents Can Transform Mathematics Learning and Inspire Success. Jo, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's talk a little bit about math. Mm-hmm. I think when I got this, my first thought was, oh, I wish I knew more about math. Mm-hmm. So I fell into, I think, what was a horrible, horrible mistake as a high schooler. Mm-hmm. I used to be very good at math. And somewhere along the line, I decided I didn't like it anymore. And they had what they called math 3T, the T being terminal.
Oh, dear.
And I took that.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't regret it then.
Uh-huh.
I didn't regret it too terribly much until my daughter was in AP calculus.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like, I don't know what. It looked like I had a stroke. I couldn't read anything on the page. It was just completely unintelligible. Mm-hmm. I imagine you probably hear that kind of thing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
People who were fine and then they kind of got convinced that they just weren't good at it.
Yes, it happens to a lot of people. In the United States, we really have a nation of pretty math traumatized people. And a lot of people, unfortunately, have been given the idea through something in school, usually, that they're not good at math. And once you get the idea that you're not good at it, it's really a downhill spiral. So we have to help everybody understand that they can do really well in math. In fact, what's really exciting now is the new brain evidence that shows that anybody can learn math to any level. So the brain is so adaptable, changeable. So I think one of the things that's hurt a lot of people in our country is the idea that there's a math gift or a math brain, you're either born with it or you're not. We now know that that's not true. There's no math gift, there's no math brain, and everyone can do it.
But some people are naturally, I mean, they just seem to naturally be able to do things. They have a facility for numbers or something, so there's got to be some little bit of...
Well, it seems like that, but what we now know is that people are born with small brain differences, but the brain differences they're born with are eclipsed by all the experiences they have, even just in the first few years. So you can make brain connections and synapses are firing every second of your life. And when you think about all the experiences people have, even before they start school, some people have had amazing brain experiences, really. So mostly people believe that there's not so much that's inherited, and it's really a lot to do with the messages people get and the experiences they have.
What do you think, or what's your position on calculators versus having to either memorize stuff or be able to figure stuff out? Because I have a younger daughter, 11-year-old, who she refuses to show her work. She happens to be somebody who can do everything in her head and just is frustrated that the teacher wants to see her work. And I'm saying, you know, one of these days you're going to make a mistake, you're going to be off by a decimal point, or you're going to, you know, have a dyslexia moment, and you're going to get nothing for the problem instead of getting 75% of it because the teacher needs to show what goes on. You know,
this is another problem that we have in schools, is that there's a huge emphasis in classrooms on calculating. And actually, math does not mean calculating. And the calculation part of math is probably the least interesting. Math is this subject that's all about inquiry and visual connections, creativity. So that question of showing your work is one I get from a lot of parents. And parents will say exactly as you have, my child can get the answer right. Why show how you got it? And one of the reasons that that's so important is showing your work is what in mathematics is called reasoning, where you spell out reasons. And reasoning is actually the essence of what math is. Scientists prove cases by getting more cases, but mathematicians reason. They set out their mathematical pathways. Other people connect with them. And that's also really important in the future, in the high-tech world. So just getting an answer isn't that valuable. A calculator can do that. Being able to map out a pathway and reason about it is actually something that employers want, and that's at the heart of mathematics. So it is a really important thing to do. I mean, many people in school are not comfortable with that because they've never been asked to do it. They've just been asked to calculate over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because I had arguments in grad school with because I somehow fell into statistics, thinking, oh my God, I'm not good at math, and managed to make it through that and was asked to do some tutoring. But I at one point got into an argument with somebody, one of the professors, and saying, look, you know, what do you care if I know this or not? Isn't it more important that I know where to find the answer? I know how to figure it out.
Exactly.
But they were very concerned with having to know exactly what it is. But as you're saying, you know, the creativity, the idea of being able to find the answer, being able to reason it out based on various pieces of information, much more valuable than having the 27, you know, first 27 digits of pi. I mean, who cares, really?
Exactly. And, you know, the high-tech leaders are coming out and being very public about this now and saying, stop the calculating. Schools are spending 80% of time on the one thing that a computer can do. We want them to be able to map out pathways, set up a model, reason, be able to represent things in different ways. So part of the problem is the emphasis on calculation that we've had in school for so long, and we really need to shift that and teach this much broader mathematics that is the math of the world and the math that mathematicians engage with.
But you're talking about higher level stuff, right?
I mean,
isn't there something to be said for at the younger grades, grade school, to have the times tables memorized? I mean, if for no other reason than because it's easier, you'll be able to save yourself some steps later on.
So what we now know is, again, this is another well-held belief that math is in the early grades is about memorizing times tables. What we now know is it's important to know math facts, but it's much better to understand them than it is to memorize them. And actually, there are two ways of knowing math facts that are two completely different brain pathways. One is the memorization pathway. The other one is the strategy use, where people work out numbers and think about them. So actually, time tests, we now know, are the early onset of is the early onset of math anxiety for a lot of children. We shouldn't be using them in schools. We should be teaching number sense to young children in a way that they can understand and creatively interact with numbers. We know as well that the most powerful use of math facts comes from people who are crossing the brain. And what that means is,
what do you mean? Yeah.
One side of the brain is more kind of numbers and the other is more visual. So people who are making the visual connection, what does 4 times 2 look like? How could you draw that as a rectangle? So we should be getting rid of time tests and instead engaging kids in these ways of understanding numbers, visually mapping them out. They'll still remember them. I mean, we'll always remember math facts, but there's much better routes to that memory of math facts than really terrorizing kids with things like timetables test.
I'm curious about the idea. You're talking about wanting to get rid of time tests,
mm-hmm.
which seems to be such a staple education. What are you going to do? I mean, you can't have some people coming and going, and you have to allocate the entire day for a test, or you know, how does it work?
Yeah, so not having them at all is good, actually. We know, first of all, it's an American phenomenon. When I moved to this country, my children were entering into third grade, and I was stunned to see that they were given 50 questions to do in 3 minutes. It's not used in other countries. I think you'd be very hard-pressed to find.
Well, we're very
country.
Busy here, you know. We don't have time to spend on
so,
all that stuff.
But what we know is that the best way, when they can now monitor the brain when people are learning. And so if people are learning math facts by thinking about strategies and developing number sense, they're actually much more effective with math facts. So when we give kids time tests, we actually make them think that math is a subject of memorization. And that is a very damaging idea. Math isn't about memorization. I teach undergraduates at Stanford, and many of them every year are kind of traumatized by math. And I say to them, you know, what happened? When did this happen? And the majority of them can pinpoint the moment in second or third grade when they took a time test. And they'll say at that point, either they weren't good memorizers or they saw math as this sort of shallow speed subject. So we can do much better than that in classrooms. We can really engage kids in rich activities all through the grades. And through those, they will remember and memorize. But the blind memorization route, there is plenty of evidence now that that's really hurting a lot of learners.
You know, on the other hand, I'm kind of looking at technology. And this is something that I, you know, because everything, of course, I see has to be translated into some parenting lesson, of course. But it really bothers me that there are so many people who cannot make change without a calculator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's,
right.
you have these things, you probably have had these too. You give somebody, two pennies because it makes sense because it was, you know, $4.97 and you give them the 2 pennies so you don't have to have the rest. People just don't know what to do with that.
That's right. And that's because they haven't developed number sense in school. Those people who are using calculators to do that probably had time tests. They were probably drilled in all sorts of things in school.
Well, it's the cash register itself, comes up with it. Yeah.
I mean, we want kids to understand and develop number sense, where they're very good with numbers. They're fluent. They can fluently, you know, use numbers. But that kind of number sense comes from teaching kids with understanding, not from the rehearsal on tests. So I agree with you. We don't want people to have to reach for a calculator to perform some simple calculation. But to give them that capability where they don't need to do that, we need to give them a good experience with numbers where they're understanding them from a young age.
Talking with Joe Bowler, who's the author of What's Math Got to Do With It? How Teachers and Parents Can Transform Mathematics Learning and Inspire Success. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Joe. And one of the first things we'll get to is how to do exactly what she just said, how to give kids that math sense that they need.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of 2 hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR. And it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911 then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Broad. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Joe Bowler, who's the author of What's Math Got to Do With It? How Teachers and Parents Can Transform Mathematics Learning and Inspire Success. Just before the break, Joe was about to say something about giving kids a sense of math understanding when they're young. How do we do that?
You teach, well, we have a website, a center at Stanford called U-Cubed, and there is lots of advice there for parents and for teachers on how to do that. Actually, we started this site just last summer, and we've already had 850,000 teachers come to the site. It's become really big, really fast. And they're coming because we're giving them, teachers and parents, the practical ways of doing it. So don't do time tests. Instead, have your kids do this really interesting math game where they're learning the math facts, but they're really enjoying it, and they're getting the visual connections as well.
What do you think of creative ways? I'm trying to figure out if there's a genre of this, because I've got it on my bookshelf, and I'm just completely blanking on the name of the person, but there's like catastrophic math. Have you seen those? Catastrophic math, and there's a super dangerous science or things like that. And and it's they are so fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually became for a little while with my daughter who just turned 12. She's, when she was a little younger, 10 and 11, you know, we would have a bedtime story and then she would do a math thing. And
great.
And there are these really just fantastic stories about, mm-hmm. you know, here you are, you've been captured by some evil person and mm-hmm. you're tied mm-hmm. to a table and there's a axe that's swinging back and forth and it goes mm-hmm. down 1 inch every second and it's going to take a mouse a certain number, you know, how long do you have? Are you going to make it with mm-hmm. that, you know,
yeah,
that kind
yeah,
of a thing?
I have seen this.
And it's so... It just really brings it to life. It doesn't mm-hmm. completely answer the question about what does this mean and why should I bother to learn this, because mm-hmm. you're probably not going to get yourself stuck in that. But, you know, things about measuring the shadow mm-hmm. Of a particular item and using that to decide how high or how long Rapunzel's hair has to be before she can have somebody climb mm-hmm. up. I mean, that just seems so creative.
Yeah.
So, but there's so little of it.
Well, most math problems can be solved in different ways. And we can open them up and allow kids to think of different methods and to bring their own ideas and thinking to the problems. They're much more engaged. But math class tends to be, here are some very close, short questions. Find an answer. Give me an answer to them. And really, most kids in math classrooms think they're performing, not learning. If we interview kids and say, you know, what do you think your role is in math class? They'll say it's to get questions right. They don't say that about other classes. So to change that, we open up math. I can give you a really simple example. So you gave a nice example of a real world, amusing kind of problem that kids can tackle. That's great. We can bring in real problems. We can also make math an inquiry subject. So one example I say to teachers, you can give the question, what's the area of a 6x4 rectangle? Very standard math question used across the states. Or we can say to kids, how many rectangles can you find with an area of 24? Now, instantly, that changes everything for kids. They're engaged. They're trying to think of different rectangles. They're looking at the dimensions of length and width. Very easy to do. But there are suddenly many different ways, different answers. Kids can think about it differently. So that's what we need for students in math classrooms. We need to open up math questions. So there's not just one calculation, but there are different ways of thinking about the problem, exactly as there is in higher-level mathematics. We can do that from kindergarten upwards, and it makes a really big difference for kids.
Now, do you think that anybody, I mean, you're talking about brain science before, mm-hmm. that really and truly anybody is going to be able to get calculus, or there's going to be certain people who are just, it's just not going to work?
There are a number of students who have really severe special needs. We know that. But for them, it's really difficult. I'm not saying it's not doable, but they have much more barriers. But that's less than 5% of kids. For the rest of the kids, yes, they can get to calculus. And we don't know who can get to calculus. We're also much too quick to say at third grade, well, they can and they can't. We don't know. Kids flourish and develop at different times, at different stages. For some students, they do that very late. It may be well into high school before they're really flourishing and thinking about different things. So it's very important that we don't decide who's going to get to calculus or not, that we allow all kids to get there. And we open math so we're giving positive messages to kids. That changes everything. I mean, one of the biggest problems we have in the States is we're constantly sort of giving the message that only some kids can do math.
Yeah. Have you seen a documentary called Between the Folds?
Yeah.
About origami?
I think I have, yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that it was such a fascinating thing. I mean, you don't think of origami as being math too terribly much, but when they talk about it in there, one of the things was, I think it was these guys at Stanford, I'm pretty sure, it was Stanford or MIT, these mathematicians, and they had a different kind of origami, which was you fold whatever you're folding, and then you get to make one cut with the scissors.
Oh, nice.
And so these guys were just folding this stuff around and then cutting it, and then they would end up with a duck or something.
Origami is a great math, yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm a professor at Stanford, but I'm teaching 7th and 8th graders in a summer camp this summer on Stanford campus, and we're doing origami for some of the time. That's a really nice way to get them thinking mathematically. I mean, really, we cannot know what math kids are going to need when they graduate and leave school. It's really impossible to know. Technology is changing so fast that the math that they're doing in school now is probably not the math they'll need then. But what we know kids need is to be able to think quantitatively, to make sense of things quantitatively, and to be comfortable doing that. And so if we teach them to problem solve and to reason and to think mathematically about different situations, we will be doing them the very best that we can do for them as they go into the future.
How did you get interested in this?
In mathematics learning?
Yeah.
Well, I was in school myself. I was actually pretty good at math, I guess, and I used to do well. But my friends really struggled with it. And I can remember even when I was 16 and 17, helping them with maths, as we call it in England, maths homework, and thinking, why doesn't the teacher explain it like this? Why does it seem so, you know, hard for the teacher to do that? And so even as a child, I was interested in the learning of math. And so then I started to study that. And at first I was at London University, and then I came over to Stanford. But I think it's really interesting how people learn mathematics. And I work with a top mathematician who's like invented a branch of algebra. And he says the hardest work he does is trying to understand the learning of elementary children learning math.
Understand it.
Yeah, to really think about how they're learning, what could help them. It actually turns out to be a very rich and complex experience, because you can think of teaching a math idea, and there are many, many, many different ways of doing that, different representations, different ways of wording it, different conversations. And all of those will have a big impact on kids and the way it will change what comes out, what they think about. So it's actually a very, the learning of math is a very complicated area. It's fascinating, I think.
From the perspective of parents, what would you say to a parent who's got a child who seems to be nervous about math? Mm-hmm. What do you do if you're not particularly facile with math yourself? How do you get across to the child that there's hope?
It's really important to get the new brain evidence across to kids. We know that everybody can learn math. We know that this is a really important one. We now know that when you make a mistake in math, your brain grows. And actually, when you make a mistake, your brain grows more than when you get work right. So pretty much kids everywhere across the States feel terrible if they make a mistake. They think that it means they're not a math person. But making mistakes is the best thing you can be doing. Being challenged, struggling, all of those things are really important. I actually have put all these into a little online course for students to help them and shape for exactly those kind of students who are feeling low about math. And already 100,000 students have taken it. It's a little free Stanford course. And it changes them on those things. They come out of it thinking, oh, I can do math, and believing in themselves. So the new brain evidence and the new evidence we have on math learning is really powerful.
Where do you get that information about the free class?
So we have a free website. It's at Stanford called YouCubed, YouCubed. And there's a section on there that says online classes, and there's one for parents and one for kids.
Wow. I mean, I can go back and do algebra.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful. All right. Joe Boal is the author of What's Math Got to Do With It? How Teachers and Parents Can Transform Mathematics Learning and Inspire Success. Jo, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight? A bit of lard on your hips and thighs and those pants slide on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and hey, it's time for a Parents at Play segment. Kids and building go hand in hand. Make it bigger, make it higher, better, greener, whatever strikes your fancy on that particular day. Not only are building toys a good time, they're also great for parent-child bonding and have been shown to improve motor skills, hand-eye coordination, social skills, cooperation, creativity, spatial skills, and so much more. No wonder we love these things so much. First up is our Play-Doh Disguise Lab featuring Despicable Me Minions, and it's from Hasbro. You know, sometimes we all feel like minions, but what do minions do when they want to feel like someone else? Enter Play-Doh Disguise Lab. Just put your minion into the hairstyling chair. One purple minion and one yellow minion and the chair are included in the kit, and give them as many silly and crazy hairstyles as you'd like. Your child's going to have so much fun with this, and you will too. You can trim their hair, you can choose different colors, you can make things that minions love, like bananas. The kit also comes with scissors that are not sharp, of course, a comb for styling, and 4 cans of Play-Doh. With the Minion movie coming out this summer, this Play-Doh kit will be even more popular. Costs about $18 at Toys R Us and a lot of other retailers. Next up is the LEGO DC Comics Batman, the Penguin Face-Off. Lego, of course, are great building toys. With a dizzying number of sets and sizes to choose from, there's something for every kid and for every parent, too, to play with. This one lets kids recreate and act out their favorite superhero moments. In this kit, the goal is to help Scuba Batman bring justice to that diamond-stealing, umbrella-wielding Waddler Penguin and his minions. No, not the yellow kind. This villain's minions are robot penguins. The kit comes with Batman and Penguin minifigures along with 2 minions and the diamond that he's going to be stealing, a ton of weapons including Penguin's umbrella and all the ingredients to build Batman's scuba vehicle, and Penguin's duck boat. A Penguin and the duck boat appeared in the recent movie LEGO DC Comics Superheroes, Justice League versus Bizarro League. The title is quite a mouthful, but it was pretty funny and a good flick for the whole family, especially all those LEGO and or superhero fans. If your child isn't into superheroes and prefers something a little more real, take a look at the Swamp Police Starter Set, which comes with 4 minions, an alligator, boat, raft, a hideout spot, and quite a few accessories, including a spider, a snake, handcuffs, walkie-talkies, a shovel, and more. It's for ages 5 to 12. Batman is about $13, and the Swamp is about $10. You can get them at shoplego.com. Bun Bun from the Bridge Direct. If you think that all building toys have to be blocks or bricks or have hard edges, you need to meet Bun Bun. These cute, cuddly, collectible, of course, animals were created to be stacked and piled up. Stacking plush toys have already created quite a splash in Japan and other countries, and they're just now hitting the U.S. markets. Bun Bun combines 2 things that kids love, building and animals, which is great. Better yet, we tested Bun Bun with both boys and girls, and everyone loved them and couldn't get enough. The first wave of characters includes Kit Kat, who's a cat, Moo Moo, who's a cow, Pup Pup, a dog, Shoo Shoo's a monkey, Bit Bit, the mouse, Pip Pip, the pig, Bye Bye, a polar bear, and Bon Bon, the rabbit. They come in 4 sizes, but regardless of the color, size, or animal, Bun Bun encourages kids to be creative and get their engineering on. It's for all ages, prices range from $5 to $20, and you can get that at bunbuntoys.com. We'll be back next week with another Parents at Play segment, but don't go quite yet, because there's more positive parenting coming.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years. We're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places, the places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Hey there, welcome to the second part of today's Positive Parenting for Military Families. I'm Armin Brott. Hey, why do kids get so much pleasure from running, skipping, bouncing, and jumping rope? Well, in a word, it's rhythm. Rhythmic movement not only feels good, it clears the mind and activates creative energy. Rhythm is the energetic expression of mathematics. Musical rhythm is created by adding, multiplying, and dividing. Rhythm is math. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking about the rhythm of math, and we're going to see that there's a way for kids to learn about addition, multiplication, division, and fractions through a rhythmic experience that releases their creative energy. Using hands and feet and voice, we're going to be able to show kids how they can express abstract ideas, in math anyway, in a direct and immediate way, in the body. And our guest for this part of the show calls it body music. But whatever you call it, whether it's body drumming or body percussion, it's probably the oldest music on the planet. Before we started hollowing out logs and playing gourds, we clapped, we slapped, we stepped, and sang our musical ideas. So make sure you've got something comfortable on, because you're not going to be able to sit still for this part of today's show. I'm Armin Brott. We'll jump in, and we'll also be clapping and snapping and tapping when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
My son Casey was a bright, fearless 20-year-old with a boundless future ahead of him. But in the blink of an eye, he was gone. While out riding a skateboard, Casey fell. He was not wearing a helmet. Our whole family wishes he was. It could have saved his life. I'm Captain Kevin Raffelli of the San Mateo Police Department. Parents, encourage your kids to strap on a helmet every time they jump on a bike, scooter, or skateboard. Think of my son Casey and use your head. Put a helmet on. It could save your life.
A message from the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Keith Terry, who's the co-author with Linda Akiyama of Rhythm of Math, Teaching Mathematics with Body Music, a Kinesthetic Approach. Keith, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Armin.
I got to say, it's a pleasure to have you outside of the context I know you in, which is at Casadero Family Music Camp, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go through, but had the pleasure of taking some workshops with Keith on body music, and so we'll hopefully be hearing lots of these things. But so when you told me, that this book was coming out, I was thinking, boy, that's just absolutely terrific. How to come somehow meld music, which you do,
right?
But also not just, I mean, it's just not just music. It's everything. The sounds that you can get out of your body.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into the math thing, tell us a little bit about how you happen to start banging on yourself.
Well, you know, I think of body music, sometimes called body percussion, body drumming. I think of it as the oldest music on the planet. Before we were making instruments, before we were using gourds and hollowing logs, slapping rocks, we were probably stomping, clapping, using our voices to express our musical ideas. And there are traditional styles all over the world. And those still exist today. Many of those still exist today. And then more and more contemporary styles are popping up all over. I've been a drummer just about all my life. I started playing when I was 3 years old.
Wow.
And in the 70s, in 1970s, I had the great opportunity of playing drums for tap dancers, the jazz tapper, rhythm tap dancers, not the show tappers, but that great generation of tap dancers who were such amazing jazz musicians also with their feet. People like Charles Honey Coles, Charles Cookie Cook, Sandman Sims, the Nicholas Brothers, Jimmy Slide, that generation of dancers. And they've all passed on now. But during that time, I was really inspired by them, and I played drums for a lot of them. And I had a moment one day in a rehearsal when I realized I could displace everything I was playing on my drums onto my body. And I stood up, and I just kind of started playing with this idea. And there were two guys, Charles Honey Coles and Charles Cookie Cook, who took me aside at different times, but basically said the same thing, which was what I was doing was similar to the ham bone, which is a traditional African-American style of body music that came out of slavery, really, in the early 1700s here in the U.S. So what I was doing was similar to the ham bone that they had done in vaudeville, but the rhythms were different, it moved differently, and they both encouraged me to pursue it, and I took their advice. I'm still pursuing it.
It's amazing. I mean, ham bone was one of the workshops I did with you a couple of years ago, and it was just, you know, banging. I'm going to try to do this, but, you know, banging on the chest, on the butt, on the hips. It's just the amount of sound, different kinds of sounds that you can get. And then I remember, you know, kind of following you over the years, you have been to Indonesia and all over the world picking up just all these kinds of body music things from everywhere and rhythms from everywhere.
Well, a lot of collaborations in different parts of the world, which I really love. And you're talking about Indonesia. I've been involved in this 30-something year of collaboration now with Indonesian artists, combining body music, my style of body music, with kecak, that kind of vocal percussion that they do there. And we call it body chak.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of Indonesia because that was a very sharp memory, having been there and having gone to one of the kecak. I don't really want to call it a concert exactly, but it was a presentation of some kind, which I thought was just fantastic.
Right.
And then you doing that with the campers at Casadero, of having, I don't know, three or four different groups doing completely different things, and how they all come together, and it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's well, in those kind of traditional styles of body music, like I said, exist all over the world.
So how do you get to, from that, from the music part of it, to the math part of it? I mean, you could say, okay, yes, you're a drummer, you're keeping beat, you know, you got to be able to keep a strong 1-2-3 or a 1-2-3-4, or if you're doing Brubeck, you could do a 5. But how do you get to the math part?
Well, you know, some people say that music is math in general. And I don't go that far with it, though I can certainly understand that argument. But I do think that music and math are both, rhythmic music in particular, and math are both about cycles and patterning. And that's really where it came from for me. When I started doing body music in 1978, one of the things that came to me at the very beginning was something I now call rhythm blocks. And it's a way of mapping the body, really, kind of systemically looking at the body. And it was, for me, that translation of drum set onto the body. But it's a way of kind of organizing thoughts on the body, and it there are 9 of the rhythm blocks, going from 1 to 9, which involve combinations of claps, clap and chest and thigh, using the bottom, using the step. So you have these 9 units, and then you can manipulate these units in all sorts of ways. So let's say you have a 3 and a 5. So a 3 is like a clap and 2 chest. A 5 is a clap, 2 chest, and 2 thighs. So that gives you a 3 and a 5. So just that alone can give you so much information to play with addition, with multiplication. And so it really kind of grew pretty naturally out of the rhythm blocks. About 10 years ago, I had a regular student in my community class that I was teaching once a month in the Bay Area. Her name is Linda Akiyama. And at that time, Linda was a school teacher, a classroom teacher, and also a dancer. And Linda would come every month, and she was a great student. She picked up things really quickly. And then she would say, oh, and this is what I did with the material last month with my kids at school. And she had this most inventive, creative way of kind of transforming those exercises into a math lesson. And I got really excited about what she was doing. And we started kind of going back and forth. You know, she would show me what they did, and I would maybe have some suggestions. Oh, have you tried this? And so she'd go back the next time and try that, and she'd come back. Well, I tried that, and it turned into this. So it was a very much a back-and-forth conversation. And I just loved the way she was thinking about this material and how she could translate it to really fun things for the students to do, because they were loving it. Well, Lynn and I continued that for 4 or 5 years. Really, and then we got to thinking, well, maybe we should. We've now collected a lot of information, and much of it she had vetted on her students, and maybe we should think about doing something with this. So the idea for a book and an accompanying DVD was born there, and we spent the next 5 years putting the effort into creating the material and testing it. We did piloting programs in Oakland Unified and San Francisco Unified and several schools over about a six-month period. And got great results from feedback from teachers and students. And it really inspired us to move forward and create this book. So it's been a long time coming. Mm-hmm. I should also say that we were about ready to go to press a little over a year ago, and then the Common Core standards really came into being, and we ended up rewriting the book.
Really?
We did. Wow. It was just enough that things had to be readdressed and talked about in a different way, with a different perspective. And then we had to go back into the classroom and really test the material before we could put it in this new book. So, you know, it's a 10-year project, and we're really excited to have it come to fruition. The actual release is in mid-June, but we have copies in hand now, so we're very excited to see it in a physical form.
I think anybody who's played music or studied music for any length of time would recognize that there's some math things. Although you think you do certain kinds of things without really saying that's math, you know, 4-4
in music, right.
That adds up to 1,
right?
So that's one measure. And I remember doing this, you know, studying the violin years ago. That you could take. Okay, we've got all these 16th notes, and you have to have 4 of them to be, to be a quarter note. And then there's a rest in here, so that one rest is minus 1/16 of the whole thing. Yeah, but if you say math, I mean, people just get freaked out about it. It's, oh, math, I'm not good at math. But you can tap your feet, you can snap your fingers.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's very much a mathematical event when you're playing music. And like you say, you have a whole note, which is 4 quarter notes, and then each quarter note has 2/8 notes or 4/16 notes. And it keeps subdividing like that in a very mathematical, logical progression.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So Linda was a third grade teacher, is that right?
She taught throughout her career. She's now a retired classroom teacher, and she's a specialist in math and science and doing various projects for the school district and continuing to be involved, but she's no longer in the classroom every day. During her career, she taught throughout the elementary grades.
Okay.
But the book is designed specifically for 3rd through 5th graders.
Talking with Keith Terry, who's the co-author with Linda Akiyama, his former student, of Rhythm of Math, Teaching Mathematics with Body Music. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Keith, and we'll get some demonstrations, and you'll be doing rhythm here in just a minute. I'm Armin Brandt. You're listening to Positive Parenting.
There once was a boy wizard whose name was Larry Smarter.
Larry, why weren't you in Professor Dinky Doodle's Mythical Creature Classification class?
Well, I'm taking Algebra 2 in a foreign language.
Oh, so you can talk to unicorns?
Not exactly, unless they're French.
Larry wanted to go to college, so he visited knowhowtogo.org to find the classes he really needed. Getting into college doesn't happen magically. Learn more at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Keith Terry, who's the co-author of Rhythm of Math, Teaching Mathematics with Body Music, a Kinesthetic Approach, which is, as it says right on the cover, aligned with Common Core Mathematics Standards. I don't even know what those are.
But it's a new national standard for teaching all kinds of subjects, including math. And it's a very specific way of questioning and exploring subjects.
Okay. All right. So take me through a little bit of the very beginning of it. I mean, how are you going to use, just for the youngest of kids, to get them kind of going and understanding the math? What are they going to be doing with their hands and their feet and their body in the beginning?
Well, we start out teaching the rhythm blocks. And
those nine.
Right. Okay. And these are units of one through nine. So one is a single clap. You just clap, palm, palm.
Yeah. Okay.
A two is a clap and a chest. It's kind of the top part of your sternum,
just
there,
one,
right in the center.
One hand,
chest, just one hand.
Okay.
Exactly.
Boom.
So you got a clap and a chest, and that's your two. One, two, one, two. So each rhythm block begins with a clap, okay? So three, you add the other chest with your second hand. So you go clap, chest, chest.
Okay.
So you could go clap right, left, or clap left, right. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Right? As long as you're alternating hands, it doesn't matter which hand you lead with. So that's your three, clap, chest, chest, clap, chest, chest. Four, just working down the body, it's the thigh, okay? The front of your leg. So you go clap, chest, chest, thigh, and that gives you four counts. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. You add the other leg for a five.
Five,
so you got
five.
Clap, chest, chest, leg, leg. Yeah, five. One, two, three, four, five. One, two, three, four, five. Six. You have a brush on the side, moving forward with your hand. It's a brush on, like on your hip.
On your, okay.
Mm-hmm. So you're brushing forward, and that gives you the sixth sound. So you go clap, chest,
two, three,
chest,
four,
leg,
five.
Leg, brush.
Okay.
And that gives you a six. One, two, three, four, five, six. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Now, are these on the DVD? Just out of curiosity,
they are. They're
okay.
On the DVD. They're explained in the book in a you know written fashion, and then in the DVD they're all taught.
Okay. And have you got them on your website? I know you've got a pretty extensive website. Is there some of the basics on there as well?
There are some of the basics on the website, okay. And you can see some excerpts from the book on the website as well. So continuing on, seven,
yeah, okay.
You have two bottoms, no brush this time. So you have clap, chest, chest, thigh, thigh, bottom, bottom. And that gives you a seven, no brush. Okay?
Oh, okay.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Eight, you have a step with the foot.
Okay.
So just
one step.
A stamp with that foot. So you would go clap, chest, chest, thigh, thigh, bottom, bottom, step. And that gives you eight. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. You add the other foot, and that gives you
That's
the nine.
Okay.
So now you have clap, two chests, two thighs, two bottoms, two feet. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. And those are the nine rhythm blocks. And with those, you can really go a long way. You get a lot of mileage with those rhythm blocks.
Okay. Just curious, why did you have one brush and then you take the brush away? Isn't that somewhat confusing?
You know, when I was sometimes people ask that, but it's it was really an organic decision just on the movement, based on the movement experience. When I was developing it, the six made sense. The brush brings your hand back and helps you put you in place for another clap. But with the seven, it just, like I said, it was a kinesthetic kind of an organic decision that came out of just doing it and what felt right and just the ease of getting from one place to the other place and back to that clap.
Okay. And all right, so you've got a group of kids and, you know, Linda's going to be doing most of the teaching, but you're going to be helping her with this and you've done this together. So what's the first lesson?
Well, we often will take those, we'll teach. First of all, we'll spend some time teaching those rhythm blocks. And the learning curve is pretty friendly. The body picks up very quickly. It's really accessible for both teachers and for students. So once you have those, then you can start manipulating. So we can add, let's say, 3 plus 5. So remember, the 3 is a clap, chest, chest.
Okay.
And the 5 is clap, chest, chest, thigh, thigh.
Okay.
So if you link those, it would sound like, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So
okay.
If you did 1, 3 plus 1, 5, it would sound like this. If I say, ready, go. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? So now, that gives you 8 beats all total. And I can count those like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So I know that if I add the 3 plus 5, it gives me an 8. So now if I have, if I invert that and I have 5 and 3,
okay,
it sounds like this. Ready, go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3. Okay? Now, if I do those at the same time, maybe I have a group of students going 3 plus 5. At the same time, I have a group going 5 plus 3. They should end at the same time because they are both equal 8 beats.
Right.
Yeah? So this is the commutative property of addition. 3 plus 5 equals 5 plus 3. So you
which
can,
makes a lot of sense to an adult, but it's a concept that has to be learned by young kids.
Exactly. So these are the basics of mathematics. And, you know, some students get stuck on the paper, you know, of seeing this. But there are a lot of kinesthetic learners out there, which we tend to ignore most of the time. And this gives them another window, another perspective on how these things work. So suddenly you can hear it, you can feel it, you embody it. It becomes a tangible exercise of 3 plus 5 equal 5 plus 3.
I'm wondering, when you're doing this in classrooms, are you getting more boys involved than girls? Or more boys involved in a different way? Because, I mean, that's sort of the stereotypical way that boys learn is by getting up and walking around and doing stuff.
I understand what you're saying. And I don't know if I can generalize with gender like that, but I do know this. That there were a lot of kids in our piloting. It was so exciting because there were a lot of kids who were having difficulty learning through, quote, traditional teaching.
Right.
That there were a lot of aha moments like, oh, I get this. Oh, I understand this. Oh, wow. Those kinds of moments. And then there were students who could not sit still in class. And they were able to harness that energy into something productive for the class. And then there were the students who had no problems with math. That suddenly they were getting really excited because they could hear the formulas that they were writing. Suddenly it became, there was a whole other component to it that they had never realized.
So I'm imagining that when these kids go to another class, they go from second to third grade or something like that, then their new teacher may not know this. And so you got a kid taking a test who's, you know, doing all sorts of body music to help him and do the thing. That must be kind of confusing to some of the adults around.
Perhaps. I mean, a lot of what we are finding is that there are school districts and certainly schools where the teachers are kind of coming on board for this. So you have, you know, the third, fourth, fifth grade teachers, you know, aligned with using this. And it's not meant to replace the curriculum. It's more to supplement the curriculum.
So what do you think has been the most fun for you out of this whole thing?
What's been most fun for me, I think, is to see the excitement of those kids who were having trouble with math, of giving a bit of clarity to their confusion about it. It's really exciting to see that because they're so vocal about it, you know, when they are suddenly understanding something that's been confusing for them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it must give them a very empowering sense that all of a sudden, wow, you know, I'm smarter, or people will look at me differently, because kids who don't get stuff often think of themselves as somehow defective.
Right.
And having something like this could definitely help with that.
Right.
Yeah.
And like I said, we so often ignore the kinesthetic learners, you know, and there are lots of them out there.
There are.
There are lots of us out there, I should say.
Yes. I remember learning a lot of that stuff that way myself. So, Keith, the website is what?
The website is crosspulse.com. crosspulse.com, or if you can remember my name, keithterry.com will take you there. And then just look for the kids and families section there. CrossPulse does lots of things. We're a nonprofit organization based in Oakland, and we have many projects going on, but we have a very strong educational component. So
great.
You'll be able to find it once you go to our
website.
And
if you ever have a chance, really and truly, if you ever have a chance to take a workshop with Keith of any kind, or his wife, who is also a tremendous musician and rhythm maker.
And her name is Evie.
Her name is Evie, right. And I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I said wife because you obviously know who the wife is. I don't have to say her name. But anyway, the Terry family and the Layden family, it's great stuff. So once again, Keith Terry with Linda Akiyami, the co-author of Rhythm of Math, Teaching Mathematics with Body Music, a Kinesthetic Approach. Thanks very much. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me on, Armin.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.